The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
The Irish author Dervla McTiernan has recently published her seventh book. It's called Three Reasons for Revenge, and it has become her fourth number one in Australia. It follows the lives of three vastly different people: an established psychologist, a single dad, and a glamorous socialite. They each receive a parcel to their home intended to destroy their lives once opened. I'm delighted that Dervla joins us now. Good morning to you.
Hi, Claire. How are you?
I'm very well. Lovely to talk to you, Dervla. Congratulations on the success of Three Reasons for Revenge. I was really interested to see it's the first book that you set entirely in Australia. And when I saw that, I said to myself, oh, we've lost her now to the Aussies. That's it. She's gone.
Well, I've been here 14 and a half years. It was probably overdue, but it took me a little bit of time to build the confidence to take the leap.
So what was that? Was that about feeling more comfortable with setting your books in Ireland up to this point?
Look, I think the first books were set in Ireland because I was so homesick. You know, I was living in Australia, adapting to the weather and the sunlight and raising kids here and missing Galway terribly. And Galway was still the place I knew better than anywhere else in the world. So I think it was really natural to set books there. But I set two novels in the US, and partly that was a market thing. I had my publisher in the US wanted US set novels. And then in time, they just opened up and they were much more flexible and they were happy for me to write a book anywhere. And I think that just combined with a growing interest in Melbourne and the fact that this idea was really a city set book, and it just all came together.
And I'm sure when you left Ireland back 14 and a half years ago, as you said, did you expect at that time it would be a permanent move?
No, we thought we were going for 5 years, like so many other people. And then, look, I mean, opportunity. Australia's been very kind to us as a country. My husband's a civil engineer. So for his work, and I wasn't a writer before I came over here. I had been a lawyer, but I started writing, and the Australian writing community and bookselling community kind of embraced me. And the children are really Australian now. Frey was born in Ireland, but our son was born here. And over time, it just kind of became more obvious that this was where we were going to settle.
Yeah. And I think once your children become settled and they are, you know, of Australia now, as you say, it's very difficult, mm-hmm. isn't it, to uproot them?
We talked about it briefly when our daughter was going into secondary school, because we thought, OK, this is probably the last opportunity. But at the time, it just wouldn't have made any sense for us. And since then, I think I've just had to try and slowly convince myself that this is it. I still struggle with it sometimes, with the idea that it's forever. It's not that I don't love Australia, because I do, but there's a part of me that will always feel that Ireland is home.
Oh, of course. I mean, that's only natural. And it doesn't have to be forever. I mean, there may come a time when, you know, you can flit back and spend at least part of the year in Ireland. I'm sure that's the dream, isn't it? That you could.
That is absolutely the dream for everybody. I think we all dream of the perfect retirement where we can do half and half. Whether or not that ever happens, who knows? But anyway, you can aim for it, right?
Listen, let's talk about the book, Three Reasons for Revenge, because it's a fascinating concept that three people receive this parcel that changes each of their lives. Was that inspired by something in particular, or was it just something that bubbled up?
It was something that bubbled up, and eventually I kind of realized where some of that bubble came from, but I didn't realize it when I was writing the book. But do you remember the movie Seven with Brad Pitt?
I do.
Believe it or not, that movie is 30 years old, which freaks me out, but it is. And there's a scene at the very end of the book where a cardboard box is delivered to a desert, and Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman are there, and Brad Pitt is screaming, "What's in the box?" And I won't mention what's in the box in case you haven't seen the movie, but it's the idea that this innocuous, almost household object can contain such utter destruction. Like in that moment, once you open that box, everything changes. There is no going back. And I didn't realize I'd drawn that probably from that source until I started talking about the book coming into publication, and I sort of put it together. So I think it's funny where you just draw those bits of old memories, bits of movies, bits of TV shows, conversations you've overheard. They all come together to make something new.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that is the thing, though, with a parcel that arrives, with a phone call that you get, with a WhatsApp message that you get. All of those things have the potential to change everything, don't they?
Right in that moment. And I think just capturing that feeling, that tension in your stomach, even the fact that for most of these characters, they don't recognize this for what it is in the moment. They're opening this box and they can't make sense of what they're looking at. It doesn't seem like much, but it becomes everything.
Now, Dervla, just when we talk about the business of books, people are still reading, they're still buying books, they're still going to the library. But more and more of us now are listening to books too, aren't we? How do you feel about that, about the audiobook business? Do you like it?
Oh, I love it. I love it. I mean, I discovered audiobooks when my children were very little and I was feeding them and realized I couldn't feed a baby and hold a novel at the same time. It was too difficult. And I fell in love with audiobooks then. I've been listening ever since. And what I've found is that it doesn't reduce my reading. It widens it. There are books that I enjoy in audiobook that I might not enjoy in paperback and vice versa. So I kind of do a bit of both.
And you read your drafts aloud, don't you, when you get to a certain point?
I do, because I think it's, you know, look, every time you come back to redraft a book, it's hard. You're reading words you've read 100 times already. You're going through the draft again and again. And it just brings another dimension. I walk around in a little room just outside my study with the manuscript and I read it aloud. And I'm finding awkward notes, unnecessary explanations, you know, parts where the pace maybe sags. And this might be draft 7 or 8, but I haven't heard it until I hear it aloud.
That's incredible, really. So then are you saying that audiobooks and their increasing popularity has changed how you write in a certain way?
I think so. I think I'm more aware of the rhythm of the words and the fact that I always want to feel like a storyteller anyway. I want to sort of say, come here, lean in, I've got something to tell you. You know, that's how I want it to feel when I'm writing a novel. And if I think about someone listening to it in audio, I can think about that. I've written a few Audible exclusives for Audible over the years as well. And when I'm writing those, because they're specifically only for audio, I change it even further. So I reduce the attributions, you know, the he said, she said's become less necessary. And also when I'm trying to find discreet or subtle ways to let you know how a character is feeling, some of that is not needed. I can take it out and put it in parentheticals or square brackets for the narrator to let her know how the character is feeling, and she can express that in the performance. So it's not bringing it into radio play territory, but it's giving it maybe a little flavor.
Yeah. And for me, when I'm listening to audiobooks, the narrator's voice is essential. It just has to be right. And I can't even define what I mean by that. But if I don't believe that voice, the narrator, I'm gone.
I totally agree with you. I think it's everything. A narrator makes or breaks an audiobook. And I think it's the combination of a few things. First of all, a voice you actually like listening to, because that's kind of key. Secondly, someone who knows how to both tell a story and perform a story and knows when to do which one. Because I think sometimes narrators have no performance and sometimes there's too much performance. You know, you just need them to tell the story. But the people who can get that exactly right, oh, I mean, I will follow a narrator as much as I'll follow a writer.
I do that, I have to admit, you know, which feels a bit strange following a narrator, but I think if they can bring anything to life, it makes mm-hmm. it, you know, for me. And when it comes to autobiography, I think that has to be read by the author.
I think it does bring another level, doesn't it? Although I think, I haven't listened to this one yet, but did Michelle Williams narrate Britney Spears's?
Yeah, and do you know what?
Because
the way that was done was brilliant, because Britney read the opening part to it and explained why she felt that she should now back away. So I think that was very acceptable. And then you drift into hearing Michelle and it just works. And I think that was a very clever thing to do, but it doesn't always work. And I think a lot of the time we do expect the author to read their own their own book. What about the difference between how Irish people consume books and Australians? Is there a difference? Do you feel that you have to adjust your writing in any way, or do you find that there's a different response from an Irish audience compared to Australian?
I think it's more about what I'm writing, because we do have, there's a rhythm to Irish speech that we are familiar with that feels comfortable to us. And I use that sort of rhythm, our structure in my writing when I'm writing a book that's set in Ireland. And I do it unconsciously, you know, the back to front, a little bit of it comes from Irish, the putting the sentence back to front. There's certain things we just do naturally. And there's a lyricism to that, but it doesn't sit right with an American book and it doesn't sit right with an Australian set book. So I have to adjust that much. But that's more about where the book is coming from than it is the year it's landing on, if that makes sense.
Yes,
but I don't really know how the difference.
You haven't to write for everybody. I mean, that's the trick, isn't it? You know, you want everybody to enjoy it. Listen, tell me how things are going on the screen adaptation front. Is there anything happening with any of your books in that regard?
Oh, there's some really fun stuff happening. What Happened to Nina is a novel I wrote a little while ago, and that was optioned, and it's quite far forward in terms of adaptation. And I got to work in the writer's room on that, which was a joy. I'm not the lead screenwriter. That is Hannah Carol Chapman, who wrote Heartbreak High for Netflix. And she's fabulous. And the whole team were amazing. And the joy, Claire, of sitting in a room when you're used to working by yourself as a writer, to be able to sit in a room with four writers and listen to them and for hours, I mean, 8 hours at a time, 5 days a week, talking about your book, talking about your story and bringing it to life in a completely new way. Like, it's just a joy.
Is it not very strange, though, to have to hand over your precious work to a team?
I think it might feel odd depending on the people you're working with. They were so generous. And if anything, Hannah is far more protective of the book than I am. I mean, I'm willing to throw anything out in the name of a story, whereas she was far more protective of the original tale than I was. Obviously, it has to change because what works between the covers of a novel is different from what works on screen. So you have to make it, you want it to soar on screen. You really do. So you want the people who know what they're doing to make that happen. And I don't want to stand in their way. I just want to collaborate as much as I can. So I just had great fun. It felt like a privilege and like a treat that I got to go and do this for a week, you know?
Well, hopefully at some point we'll get to see that on the screen. And then this character, the lead character in this book, Detective Sergeant Judith Lee, are we going to see Judith again?
That's the big question. And a lot of people asked me that when I was on tour in Australia, because the book has been out here for a few weeks. But I'm not sure. And the reason I'm not sure is because, first of all, the next book which I've just finished is set in Dublin, and it's about two young Irish women. And I think I'll write the second one in that series. I always try to kind of follow the story that is shouting loudest in my ear at any given moment and write that one. And at the moment, it's those books. I may come back to Judith, though, because I think there's more story there to tell.
OK, well, we look forward to that. And if you are in Dublin at any stage, will you pop in and see us, Dervla? We'd love to have you here.
I would love that. That sounds like fun.
We'll hopefully see you then. Dervla McTiernan, congratulations on your continued success. The book is called Three Reasons for Revenge. It's a fascinating story about these parcels, as we said, that arrived to three very different people and changed their lives. Irish author in Australia, Dervla McTiernan.
The Claire Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.